Blog Talk Radio.
I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're picking back up in Contact Report 10 in regards to the Billy Meyer case. Edward Albert Meyer is a 77-year-old farmer who lives in a tiny mountain village in Hinterschmidruti, which is maybe an hour east of Zurich. He's had extraterrestrial contact since about the age of 5 years old. He has documented these contacts in these booklets called Contact Reports. There are some 550-560 approximately contact reports, some of which are as short as a page, others are close to 100 pages. In addition, Billy has written many books of his own, some of which are quite large. The Goblet of Truth is nearly 700-800 pages. If you go to the Future of Mankind site, Google Billy Meyer Wiki or Google the Future of Mankind, you can find those contact reports. I suggest you print them out and read them. Get away from the computer and just take the time to read them. Contact Report 10 documents a contact Edward Albert Meyer had with a woman named Semyase. Semyase was a Plearian woman, an extraterrestrial human, a beautiful woman, some 350 years old approximately. She met with Billy for the first time in 1975 when she literally would land her beam ship there in Hinterschmidruti and have these face-to-face discussions with Billy. Prior to that, Edward Albert Meyer had had 22 years of contacts, 11 years of contacts with an extraterrestrial man named Svoth, who was roughly 1,000 years old. And then about 11 years of contacts with a woman named Asket, who was actually from a parallel universe that is called the Tao universe. But Billy, in this contact, is speaking with a woman named Semyase, who is a Plearian woman. The Plearian live in the Milky Way galaxy, not in our Pleiades. Many people call these the Pleiadians. In 1995, just before they left the Earth, they revealed their true identity as the Plearian. They live some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades in a different space and time configuration on a planet called Era, which in many respects is similar to the Earth. Semyase is telling Billy about something she calls the human spirit. And she said that the human bears a spirit that does not die nor sleep. During the deepest sleep, it records all our thoughts and emotions. It informs the human whether his thoughts are correct or false if he has learned to pay attention to it. The human spirit is, you could think of it as almost a tiny fragment of creation itself, of the universal consciousness. The human spirit is located in the center of your midbrain, in an area called the superior colliculus. And it sends its energy out through the entire body, and it animates every cell of your body. The human spirit, I think of as the real you. It's what lasts through these many, many incarnations, these many, many lifetimes that we have. Semyonsky told Billy that the spirit within the human is the bearer of the creative realm, and every human has his own spirit. Our spirit form is where our creativity comes from. And to create means to invent something or something that evolves from our own thoughts or imagination, like a work of art or an invention. This spirit, which is the bearer of the creative realm, you could think of a realm as a community or territory over which you rule. So your human spirit rules in this creative inner world of yours. And Semyonsky said that the human spirit is the seed of the infinite, but few are those who recognize that. The human spirit handles in non-mammal species like fish and birds. It interacts or is located also in the area of the tectum, which controls the areas related to eye movement, and some studies indicate that this area of the brain deals with multisensory integration. In other words, not only eyesight, but your hearing also plays a role there. So the human spirit is extremely important because when we die, the physical body does die. And the human spirit comes out of your physical body and it goes into this band of energy called the fine matter world. And the universal consciousness will take your past life memories and store them in what's called the universal storage banks. And then you'll spend anywhere from 10 years to 150 years, which is 150 years is about the normal time on Earth between lifetimes. Because of our great overpopulation, spirits tend to come back sooner. But whenever the appropriate time is, the universal consciousness will take your human spirit and place it back into the body of a child 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. Now, Semyonsky, as she was explaining all this to Billy, she said that our terrestrial philosophers here on Earth, our philosophers like Plato and Socrates, spoke about the human as the microcosm within the macrocosm. And I think what Semyonsky is getting to there is that in ancient Greek and Neoplatonic schemas, it was described that these patterns in nature repeat at all levels of the cosmos, in the largest scale, which would be the universe level, or at the smallest scale, which can be the subatomic, or even metaphysical level. So that is the handiwork of the universal consciousness, the creation. We see these repeating patterns in the physical aspect of creation. Remember, the creator, the universal consciousness, is a superintelligence. It builds universes as a part of its own evolution. And in one of Billy's books, Billy describes the creation this way. He says, "The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation." So this superintelligence radiates love. At every moment and every place, you can experience the radiating love. of creation. However, creation is not a religious divinity. It radiates love, but it's not anthropomorphic. It doesn't become angry or jealous or vengeful. It doesn't get involved in human wars. In the German of the contact notes were originally written in German and then translated to English. The universal consciousness is referred to as a Wesenheiten. Other things called Wesenheiten are gas and water. So think of this universal consciousness almost in the same terms you would look at natural things in the natural world, like gas and water, but there's an intelligence here, an intelligence that is much, much higher than our consciousness. It couldn't lower itself to speak in human words, in my opinion. The universal consciousness would never communicate in human words, just like we couldn't communicate in a bark or a meow or a moo. We as humans have a higher consciousness than those animals, so we cannot communicate through their vocabulary or verbal means. The universal consciousness is an amazing, amazing thing. And if we study nature, we can see the repeating patterns of this universal consciousness, because these patterns are the visible expression of the love that this spiritual entity has. And you can see these repeating patterns in the electron rotating around the atom, in the spiral of the seashell, you see the spiraling arms of the galaxy, the spiral arms of our DNA. Just like the electron rotates around the nucleus, the planets rotate around stars. We have a branching pattern in our circulatory structures. There's a branching pattern to lightning during a storm. There's a branching pattern that's formed in trees. So this beautiful repeating patterns of nature occur all over. And that's the handiwork. That's the signature of the universal consciousness. And Billy has a wonderful book. It's called The Goblet of Truth, which states that rivers, lakes, stones, brooks, air, water, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involve many, many lifetimes, and that death is just the passage into pure spirit. And that all of these creatures in creation are connected by these psychic vibrations, these psychic swinging waves, these invisible connections. You can see in the way the birds fly when they'll move and turn on a dime, or they'll all leave the same tree at the same time and fly several hundred yards and 20 or 30 of them will land at the same time in the next tree. Because creation is connected. And there's an indissoluble web of life. And that's what Samyase is teaching Billy. And that's what these extraterrestrials came to tell us. So the reason for this is because we're destroying the world that we need to survive, and it's because we don't understand anymore our interconnection with all of nature. So we need to relearn this understanding that everything is connected. Samyase went on to continue in Contact Report 10 to tell Billy about the human spirit, and she said the inner dimensions of the human are endless. She also said the spirit is the wonder of all wonders, and all power comes from the spirit. She explained also that happiness comes from within, and that happiness is never a location. So let's talk about what she said about the inner dimensions of the human being endless. A dimension is a measurement in length, width, or depth. Now, space, we can locate a point by X, Y, and depth, length, width, and thickness. But the fourth dimension is time. And Einstein spoke of that in the theory of relativity. But the inner dimensions of the human spirit are endless because the human spirit is a fragment of creation. And the spirit is said to be the wonder of all wonders. A wonder is something that causes astonishment and amazement and surprise and admiration. And it says that all power emerges from the spirit. And power is capacity, strength, energy. Also in different fields, power is measured differently and spoke about differently. And then we talked about happiness and that happiness comes from within. And it's a self-created thing because, remember, the human spirit is the bearer of the creative realm. And it's the evolution of your own thoughts that will bring you happiness, as well as your spiritual poise. Now, poise is the ability to maintain a balanced condition. And the Meyer material talks about maintaining a neutral balance to your thoughts. Never too positive, never too negative. Always a balance. And joy comes forth from the human's inner part, and it's created by spiritual poise. Poise means steadiness, stability. It usually also entails being self-confident and dignified and these kinds of things. Sannyasi went on to explain that wisdom is an elemental, tremendous power. And wisdom really deals with the ability to discern what is true or judging what is correct. And wisdom is said to be an elemental power. And when something is elemental, it's comparable to the great forces of nature. Something is tremendous when it has an extraordinarily great amount of size or intensity. Remember, wisdom is said to be an elemental, tremendous power. And that's why when Sannyasi first landed her ship and first talked about these issues with Billy, one of the first things she said to him was, love and wisdom belong together because the creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. So when you go into the forest, you should be able to hear all of these creatures that are connected by these psychic vibrations. And you should be able to hear their sounds because they communicate with one another. The crickets, the cicadas, the birds, the frogs, the owls, they're all a part of an indissoluble web of life. When you think of a web or something that's woven, you'll think of laces that are an interlacing of things. And that's the way nature is. And we're supposed to have respect or venerability for nature. Venerability is the great appreciation of the dignity and the age of something. So, and the part we have within us, this human spirit, and the human spirit has something in it called the gemut. And the gemut controls the thoughts and the feelings associated with the human spirit. See, we have thoughts and feelings associated with our material consciousness or our psyche. But we also have thoughts and feelings associated with the human spirit. And the human spirit has the ability to think most like nature thinks, or the universal consciousness thinks. Now, when Billy had his first meetings as a young boy with this extraterrestrial man named Spock, he would get these telepathic messages to go out into the wilderness. And he would often go into the Horrigan Forest in Switzerland. And Billy enjoyed looking at nature, and he would often watch the trout swimming in the streams there. And then one particular day, when he was about 1945, out of the sky came this silvery spacecraft, and it landed in a field nearby. And this 1,000-year-old man came out and introduced himself to young Edward and walked him back into the craft. In the craft, Sloth took up some 70,000 meters into the air, and he told Billy that his life would be very important, that he would have a very special mission on the earth, and that he would be a teacher, and he would be a prophet, and he would teach the people of the world an ancient universal teaching, a teaching called the teaching of the spirit, the teaching of life, the teaching of the truth. And it will teach concepts like, what is the universal consciousness? What is the human spirit? And it will focus on creative natural laws like the law of human spirits reincarnation. It will teach us how to keep our thoughts in balance and how to maintain spiritual poise, which is that steadfastness and that balance. It will also teach us how to control our thoughts. Now, our thoughts are the source of an incredible power. This power is an elemental power. And the human spirit is the wonder of all wonders, and all power comes from the human spirit. Now, Sloth explained that the people of the earth had gone down a wrong path of evolution. And as a result of that, we were entering into a time called the third millennium. And that in the third millennium, our leaders would become megalomaniacal. And they would take our rights of self-determination away. Much later in life, Billy would write this book called The Goblet of Truth that I mentioned earlier. And it talks about our civilization now in the third millennium. And it explains the following. It says, irrespective of what is involved, whether simple or fanatical religions and sects, stubborn nationalism, fascism, might-greedy politics, terrorism, or neocapitalism, all of these are aberrations of the negative and evil. So our society now is an aberration. An aberration is something that's gone down the wrong path of evolution, something that's left the natural, correct path. You could think of our society as an abnormality. All of these ideas, neocapitalism, fanatical religions, represent an immense threat to all the peoples of the earth, in particular in the third millennium. And Sloth explained to Billy that in the third millennium would start when we would drop the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And there is a whole series of prophecies called the Henoch prophecies about what will occur in the third millennium. The most foreboding prophecy in the Henoch prophecy says that in the third millennium, the greatest disaster in recorded history will occur when nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons are released by automated systems which run outside of human control. This will occur on the North American continent. Here in the Goblet of Truth, let me continue reading. It says, "And truly the danger of catastrophe befalling humanity has never been so great as today and in the very near future, which is coming towards us." Let me just again go over some of these terms. A sect is a philosophical or political group, especially as one regarded as extreme or dangerous. We have sects today in extreme Islam, also in extreme forms of Christianity. A fanatic is a person that is often has an intense uncritical devotion. So we're going to see the rise of these fanatics like Ayatollah Khomeini, which killed tens of thousands of people in Israel in the 1980s. His Republican Guard killed many women using rape and disfigured women in horrible ways with knives. Now, these fanatics are very dangerous. Fascism. What is fascism? Fascism is defined as a governmental system led by a dictator having complete power. Even our government is becoming more and more fascist. Neocapitalism. What is neocapitalism? Capitalism is an economic system in which trade and industry and production are often privately owned and operated for profit. Now, all of these things have created an aberration, which is the way our society is. An aberration is the act of departing from the right, normal, or usual course. Some words that are synonymous with aberration would be abnormality, eccentricity, illusion, delusion, hallucination. So we're heading towards a third global conflagration, which could be the collapse of nature. It could be the clash of industrialized nations. It's very interesting. We could trace all of this back to a time around the Roman Catholic Church. And let me read a section here where the Goblet of Truth talks about the Roman Catholic Church. In the Christian world, the blame for this undoubtedly lies fairly and squarely at the door of the Roman Catholic Church. Christianity is a monotheistic, strictly autocratically oriented religion, and it is guilty of developing completely new evil and Asgardic directions of thought and forms of state after the fall of the despotic Roman Empire, which spread all over the earth and under which human beings are suffering in the new time. The Meyer material talks about a consciousness-controlled tyranny that has formed in our societies. Consciousness is the state of being awake and aware of one's surroundings. To condition means to bring something into the desired state. So the governments of the world are conditioning our consciousness, conditioning our minds to bring us into a subservient state where we think only in terms of what the tyranny tells us to think. A tyranny is a cruel, unreasonable, or arbitrary use of power. And the tyranny starts in our schooling system. It also spreads out into our religions. It spreads out even into our entertainment field, like the television. All of this is designed to control your mind, to control how you think. A consciousness-conditioned tyranny designed at servitude. I thought I would jump real quickly. Maybe we'll take a quick break, play a little music, and then I will get back to some interesting things we've been talking about in Contact Report 150. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll be back in about 4 minutes. Hello, everyone. I would like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I thought I would pick back up in the second half of our show on this Saturday afternoon, talking about Contact Report 70, and talking about the civilizations that have existed on the Earth prior to our civilization. Our civilization really is climbing out of the rubble of Atlantis and Lemuria about 11.5 thousand years ago. The Earth experienced a tremendous devastation when the people from Atlantis and the people from Lemuria fought a great war. And in its culmination, Lemurians brought a giant asteroid back and used it as a weapon and slammed it into the Earth, which eventually wiped out our civilization, or the civilization that existed on the Earth at that time. The Atlanteans had been here for quite some time. The time period of this civilization really goes back to 133,000 years ago. And the story is extremely huge about what happened during this time period on the Earth. The Earth had been settled two times before that I'm aware of, that I've found in the Mayan material. If we go back 150,000 years ago, an Ishwisher king of wisdom named Pelagon came here to the Earth and brought about 70,000 people with him, and he had a society that was very successful for several thousand years. And then Pelagon died. Pelagon was a king of wisdom, a man who was at the fifth stage of human evolution. There are seven stages. And he had tremendous abilities and was a very benevolent leader. And at that time, the human extraterrestrials that lived on the Earth they had a civilization that went on all the continents of the Earth. But after Pelagon's death, a great war broke out, which destroyed the civilization. Pelagon's people came from the Pleiaren star system that I talked about earlier at the beginning of the show. The ones that survived this great war left for Beta Centauri. Beta Centauri is about 300 light years from Earth. My suspicion is they again went to a Beta Centauri in a different space-time configuration. Our Milky Way galaxy is about 100,000 light years across, but it has different space-time configurations or different dimensions. In these dimensions are other solar systems and stars and planets. And these extraterrestrials can jump from star to star with almost no time passing. And they can come in and out of these different space-time configurations as well. So after the destruction of Atlantis and Lemuria about 11.5 thousand years ago, there was a man that came here named Eris the 11th, and he was a very distant descendant of Eris the 1st. Eris the 1st was considered an Ishwish, probably mostly a scientist, not so much in the spiritual teachings, but he had instigated the war between Atlantis and Lemuria, and Eris the 11th is one of the descendants of Eris the 1st. Now, Eris the 11th had a son named Jehovan, and Jehovan ruled after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria, and he led the Hyperboreans. He ruled the Hyperboreans, and he ruled three other earthly people that were on the Earth as well. Hyperborea was an area in the north, And prior to the destruction of Atlantis and Lemuria, the poles were actually wondrously warm and wonderful climates. And Hyperborea was a tremendously beautiful place before the pole shift, I think, that is what messed up the climate there. The first, besides the Hyperboreans, the first group of people that Eris the 11th son, Jehovan, took over or controlled were a people from Armenia called the very distant descendants of an Ishwish named Armus, who was here 133,000 years ago. Now, the second people that fell under Jehovah's control was the people called the Aryans. And you remember Hitler talked about the Aryans and tried to find evidence of the Aryans. And he wanted his Third Reich to be the descendants of these Aryans. He only wanted Aryan people. His idea was that these Aryans were actually blonde-haired, blue-eyed people. But the Aryans were still on the earth after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria, and Jehovah was under control of the Aryans. The third people that were left on the earth were not so much a people as a group of gypsies. They were called the Hebrons or the Hebrews, and the Meyer material says that the Hebrews are responsible for much of the, or are part of the Hebrews, I should say, all the Hebrews are responsible for many of the wars and the trouble that exists on the earth. Now, the reason I bring up Eris the 11th and Jehovah and his son Jehave, and particularly Jehave's son Erisame, because Erisame became the leader of the Giza intelligences. The Giza intelligences created kind of a headquarters for themselves far below the Giza Plateau in these old cubical constructions that were 72,000 years old. The Giza intelligences tried to gain control of the people of the earth using religion. And that's where the consciousness conditioned tyranny began on the earth. And even though these Giza intelligences are no longer around, they've been pushed off the earth, they were booted off the earth, they were here all the way until the 70s. And eventually the Pleiaron pushed, got these folks off the earth. But back in ancient times, deep in the interior of the earth and deep below the pyramids, they established themselves securely and they converted rooms and constructions deep below the pyramids of Giza for their wicked purposes. Now, the Great Pyramid of Giza, according to Meyer material, is some 73,000 years old. And they attempted to control the people of the earth using religious teachings and other kinds of evil machinations. So the Giza intelligences had other leaders that came to power. Erisame eventually was killed around 3010 BC by a mutineer named Hen. Hen was known as the Cruel One, and he was also called Jehovah. And I think he may, in fact, be the Jehovah of the Old Testament. I could not swear to that, but it's very, very possible. Jehovah was deposed by Comegall I and then Comegall II. And then Comegall II died December 27th of 1976. And eventually, the remaining Giza intelligences were rounded up by the Pleiaron and pushed off of the earth. So, if we step back, I wanted to pick up with some things we had talked about in Contact Report 150. So let's fast forward in time a little bit. We've talked about the ancient past and the people that were left on the earth after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria, and how the Giza intelligences established themselves, and how this lineage of rulers ruled the earth with a tyranny. Eventually, these people kind of went underground, and they influenced the people of the earth using these telenotic impulses. Now, what was happening on the surface was the Roman Empire formed. The people of the earth were starting to learn how to make steel tools again. You see, when Atlantis and Lemuria were wiped out, we were thrown back to the Stone Ages. So the Iron Age began around 1200 BC, and if we move now to the British Islands and to Ireland, there were a group of people that rose up right around the 4th and 5th century AD, roughly about the time of the fall of the Roman Empire. The Celts and the Druids came to power. The Druids were an aristocratic people who were somewhat wealthy in many ways. They had learned to use steel tools. They were educated. One Druid prince was named Merlin. Merlin is a very historic figure, and he's known for his interactions with King Arthur and the Round Table. Now, King Arthur was not the chivalrous man he's depicted as in some of our history. In fact, King Arthur was a brutal... they called him the Boar of Cornwall because he was brutal in battle and he killed people, and he wasn't a warm and fuzzy, nice, sweet kind of guy. Neither were his knights of his Round Table. They were thugs. They were like criminals, according to Meyer material, anyway. But there was one very noble man in this group of, I think, one would think of them would be pirates. I almost think of them as pirates. Merlin was a very knowledgeable Celtic prince. He was a druid. He was a doctor. He was a teacher, a historian, a prophet. He was from South Wales. And these druids were an educated professional class of Gaul, Great Britain, and Ireland during the Iron Age. Again, the Iron Age started around 1200 BC. Merlin lived in a castle called the Dinas Bran Castle, standing up high on a hill in Wales. Now, Christianity thought of Merlin as kind of an evil character who was messing with Satanism, but all that Merlin learned to do was meditate very, very well. And he developed the ability to remote view, to see. And he would have these visions. One of his visions, these dragons fought. And a red dragon beat a white dragon. He realized that the red dragon meant the British race. And the white dragon meant the Saxons. Excuse me, the Saxons in this case were victorious. So there's all these legends that appear around Merlin, said that he helped build Stonehenge with the help of a giant. I don't think this is supported by the Meyer material, but the full story of Merlin can be found in Contact Report 469. So go back to the Future Mankind site, look that up, print that out, read it. You'll be fascinated. Now, Merlin had extraterrestrial contact, according to the Meyer material. He met a Plaran woman named Cerdwena, who forged a sword on the Isle of Avalon. This sword later became erroneously known as Excalibur. That's never what was what it was called. It was called Kalidflug. It was also known as the lightning sword. It was a form of high technology, and it would produce these light rays, much like lightning. And Merlin used it in battle, and so did King Arthur. And King Arthur really abused it and murdered many people in many bloody battles with this sword. Eventually, after the death of King Arthur, Merlin gave the sword back to Caradwena, who, by the way, if you listen to the show enough to know who Ptah was, Caradwena was the great aunt of Ptah. And by the way, you can also listen to these shows if you Google Ohio Exopolitics out on Google. You'll find a website called exopoliticsohio.us. And if you look on the left menu there, you can navigate to the archives, and you can listen to the archives from Revolution Radio or these archives. These archives that I do on Blog Talk Radio that talk about the Meyer material. So you can catch up and learn about Merlin, but don't worry, we do repeat probably too much sometimes on this show. Now, there's also the Holy Grail legends, and the Goblet of Truth talks about the Holy Grail legends. The Holy Grail was really a meditation place of the Druids. The Druids meditated, and Merlin was an expert meditator. Merlin, who had interaction with Caradwena, got some of the teachings of Henoch. And he called these teachings the Cauldron of Life for whatever reason. Caradwena was also known as the Triple Goddess. I don't know why, at least I haven't found out yet. But the Holy Grail has the legend of being a dish or a cup, which Joseph of Arimathea used to capture the blood of Christ during crucifixion. Meyer material said no, it was really just a meditation place of the Druids. Merlin became familiar with the teaching of Henoch. Now, the spirit of Edward Albert Meyer has incarnated on the earth as six different personalities: Enoch or Henoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. Henoch, I talked about the Henoch prophecies earlier. The Henoch prophecies came from the second Henoch. There were actually three Henochs. The second Henoch, around 9,800 years ago, I believe, wrote these Henoch prophecies, and part of the writings of Henoch Merlin got a hold of, and he became a student of Henoch, who is also known as Enoch. So, the true Grail only existed as a holy place and wasn't a cup that captured the blood of Christ. There was also the legend of the Holy Chalice, where Christ was said to, at the Last Supper, pass this chalice around. And there's four places on the earth that are said to have this Holy Chalice now. Well, there was also something called the Spear of Destiny, which was supposed to have pierced Christ's body as he hung on the cross. Well, it's also called the Holy Lance. There are four places which have the Holy Lance. One is in Rome, one is in Vienna, one is in Armenia, and the other is in Antioch. The first Holy Lance is at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. St. Peter's Basilica is one of the most beautiful and largest churches. Michelangelo was the architect, or one of the architects, of that basilica. The Holy Lance in Vienna, in Austria, there's one there as well. This is all part of the cult of relics that still exists on the earth. The Holy Lance in Vienna was said to have been seen or captured by Hitler during World War II when he took over Vienna, when he took over Austria. And there's one book, there's actually a couple books on this, but one of the authors said that the Spear of Destiny was taken to Antarctica in a submarine after the war. You know, the Nazis were said to have gone to Antarctica at this time. And the third place is in Armenia. Armenia has Turkey to the west and Iran to the south. And the other Holy Lance is said to be in Antioch, which is a Greek city called the Cradle of Christianity. There were a couple authors. Dr. Howard Buchner wrote a book about the Spear of Destiny. Trevor Ravencroft wrote a book in 1973. Another one of the interesting relics of Christianity that's talked about in the Goblet of Truth is the Shroud of Turin. The Shroud of Turin, in modern some circles of Christianity, is thought to have been the shroud that was placed over Christ when he died, and then he eventually was resurrected, and then his image is burnt into the shroud, allegedly. Well, the Myra material says that the Shroud of Turin is not the figure of Jesus/Emmanuel, but is actually the death mask of an Italian merchant called Cesare Canova, and it was created by his brother Luciano Canova, who was involved in alchemy. But there's been a lot of research done on the Shroud of Turin. It's been radiocarbon dated to about 1200 to 1400 AD by three different universities. But there's also something called the Shroud of Turin Research Project, which claims that the Shroud of Turin has the image of a man that has been crucified. So there's a bit of a controversy around the Shroud of Turin as well. Anyway, we've covered a lot of kind of historical material this evening, as well as certain principles that I think are been brought out in the Meyer material. Please go to exopoliticsohio.us and download some of the past shows. I think you'll enjoy them. On Revolution Radio tonight, I won't be there, but my producer will be interviewing Dan Willis, so you can enjoy that. That'll be at freedomslips.com. And I think I'll be back on tomorrow with another episode of the Meyer Material. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Have a good afternoon. My name is Mark Snyder. This is Ohio Exopolitics, and we'll talk to you real soon.